Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, it is a sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me is Rob Brenton. Speaking of Rob Brenton, coming up in about 15 minutes, our old producer, Brandon Kylie, now in ESPN 101 in St. Louis. He will be on the show in 15 minutes. The Cardinals have found themselves in the middle of the sports news as they have been impacted by the coronavirus. Again, it's The Drive. My name is Carrington on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com. And the radio.com app. To my right, it's the sports machine, Sean Levine, Rob Brenton producing this thing. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good, man. I was up late last night watching NBA, and I didn't bet on the Lakers game, but I did hit my first bet of the new kind of ish NBA season. I had the Jazz last night, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Two great NBA games
really
yesterday.
Was.
You could not get off to a better start than the NBA did in their bubble. Before we start talking sports, KC Live is showing all the Royals games with the radio play-by-play. It is presented by Miller Lite. So on Fridays, Saturdays, and select Sundays, KC Live will have an MC, a DJ, in-game features and promotions, contests, and more. They'll have ballpark food that you love, like hot dogs, popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jacks, and more. They will have picnic-style tables set up with more than 100 tables all spaced out following the health department guidelines on safe and social distancing practices. Seating is available on a first-come, first-served basis. This is your last chance to win. We need caller number 6 to win a Miller Lite prize pack. What's in the Miller Lite prize pack? Well, $25 gift card to Guy Fieri's, one t-shirt, two koozies, a hat. Plus, you get entered into the grand prize drawing where you could win a grill and two chairs valued at $250. Caller number 6 right now, you will win a Miller Lite prize pack. This is your final chance to win. So let's get into the top story of today in sports. We are now 8 days into the baseball season, 7 days into the Kansas City Royals season. And 20% of the baseball games have already been canceled due to the coronavirus. 20% of the games. There is the ideal scenario, which is what's happened in the NBA, where no players have tested positive. I would say a mixed result, at least early on with the MLS. You and I certainly got our jokes off about the MLS, and they had two teams who I heard were being called FC Cootie. That's what people were calling those two teams. And then you get to the other end of the spectrum. You cannot have a worse 10 days than what the Major League Baseball schedule has looked like so far, where 20% of the games on an individual night have been canceled on the hands of the coronavirus.
Yeah, it's not looking good for, I don't want to say that the rest of the season's in jeopardy, but I will say the next couple of weeks are going to be crucial, because if we keep going down this path, Carrington, it's hard to imagine the baseball isn't either going to come to a complete halt or figure out an alternative plan. Easy for me to say, because you're right. We're, 1 week into the season. The Royals are 3-4. They've played 7 games, and 20% of the scheduled games were supposed to happen tonight will not happen. I think it's pretty naive to think that's not going to happen next week, next month. And then we're talking about trying to get in 60 games, which when we originally heard it compared to 162 sounded like, well, that's not that hard. That's not very many. But now that we're only 1 week into it and there's 53 games left of the regular season, it's hard to imagine this thing getting better before it gets worse.
If you're a Major League Baseball player, I think the question you have to be asking your training staff, the question you have to be asking your organization, and the questions that the players should be asking the commissioner, Rob Manfred: why should we trust you? What are you doing to keep us safe? Think about it. It's not like we are 45 games into this and now we're starting to see some leaks and some cracks in the system. The system has damn near been broke after the first weekend of it. This entire week, nationally, all we have talked about is the virus and its impact on the sport. We have talked about the Miami Marlins. Now we're talking about these numbers of games that are being canceled. That's not the conversation we're having in the MLS anymore. That's not the conversation in the NBA. The NBA is getting patted on the back for how they've looked when it comes to the coronavirus. And everybody is saying, hey, we doubted you and your ability to keep the player safe, but you've done a good job so far. Where I trust if something happens with the NBA and let's say a player or two test positive, I trust their ability to isolate the case. We have seen nothing but positive test after positive test after positive test with the Marlins, and now teams that weren't even playing the Marlins have been impacted with it, like a team like the St. Louis Cardinals.
Well, the whole name of the game with sports and the coronavirus in 2020 is let's be as safe as possible, right? Let's minimize the risk as much as we possibly can. It's never going to be zero. It's always going to be, there's going to be some sort of a risk. And I feel like basketball, the NBA, and maybe it's not fair because they're one night into the season, looks like they've done it as good as possible. The MLS, not a lot of positive tests, kicked out the teams early on. The NHL, literally zero positive tests in their bubble so far. It looks like that's working, and it's part of the reason is the actual bubble, and part of the reason is because they had a plan. And with baseball, it's kind of felt like the entire time. This isn't something, C-Dot, that I feel like me and you are being reactionary to and saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening with baseball. We've been saying the entire time, what's baseball's plan? It sounds like it's kind of messy. Like they wrote out a bunch of stuff on a napkin and now they're trying to make it work. And I'm actually not that surprised that we're, I mean, look at all the travel. Look at all the stuff that's going on. Look at what baseball is. Are we really surprised that a first baseman got it and gave it to a pitcher and a starting pitcher gave it to a reliever and then the Marlins gave it to the Phillies who gave it to a, of course that was going to happen. We knew that was going to happen. So I'd love to say that I'm surprised. I can't believe it, but this is kind of exactly what I thought would happen.
Rob, correct me if I'm wrong here. So the St. Louis Cardinals, they canceled their game today against the Milwaukee Brewers. They only have, as of now, two players who have tested positive with the coronavirus, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. If the plan was we know we're going to have positive tests, we're now canceling games because two players have tested positive, how can you finish? Like, I think that's a fair question for everybody to ask. Now, I understand a situation like the Miami Marlins where 19 of their 60 players on the roster have tested positive. You can't really field a competitive team. You got to remove yourself from it until you get the situation under control and limit the outbreak. But we're now canceling entire baseball games and maybe series because two players on the team have tested positive. How are you going to be able to have a legitimate season? This season was never going to be legitimate when you compare the normal amount of games to where it is right now. But it at least was supposed to be this next man up philosophy where if one or two guys test positive, all right, you bring somebody up from your taxi squad and now you play. If the plan is going to be two players now test positive, we have to shut the game down. I just don't know how you get through the next 2 months and a playoff doing it this way. I just don't know how you can maintain any sense of competitiveness and true competition if that's going to be your strategy and plan. I've always thought this when it comes to baseball. I think some of it is just kind of due to the virus. It just feels like baseball is sort of spinning the wheel right now and just seeing what the results are. And it doesn't really seem like they have a pretty concrete plan on what they're doing. The MLS, we made fun of them. The MLS had a concrete plan. Hey, you have these many positive tests. You can't be here anymore. You need to go back to wherever in the hell you came from. Dallas, Nashville, you cannot be in the bubble anymore, and we'll get this thing under control. Baseball is really throwing darts here at a really big board.
I would say that the problem isn't that they don't have a plan. The problem is they've got all these different plans. Like with baseball, there isn't one thing. Because what's your line of demarcation? I hear what you're saying. Only two players have tested positive. How can they cancel this game? What should it be? Should it be three, four, half the pitching staff, the bullpen? Like, at what point are we supposed to cancel the games? Because if it's only two, and this is the precedent they use going forward, and that's kind of their line, if one guy gets it, we'll keep going, but if two guys get it, we're going to cancel the game, then there's no way in hell we're going to have a baseball season.
Yeah, I mean, we're just wasting our time. We're wasting our time if that's what the plan's going to be here. My other question would be, NFL fans, 913-576-7610. I know somehow we've spun this like media members don't want NFL games, even though our livelihood is all dependent on there being football season. It's been very odd to me. Legitimate question here. We are seeing the struggles that Major League Baseball is having with half of the numbers. It's not like the NFL is going to some small town USA where they're kicking the residents out and now we're posting up here. This is football town USA. They're not going to be at a bubble. That for the most part, they are going to follow a very similar plan to what's happening in Major League Baseball. What's the play here? Are we canceling NFL games if two players on the Baltimore Ravens test positive for the coronavirus? Are we canceling NFL games if two players test positive on fill-in-the-blank team? What is the NFL going to do to stop an outbreak like we've already seen in the first 10 days of the Major League Baseball season? And again, you're now adding to more players who can potentially contract the virus and spread it amongst themselves. The NBA seems to have it figured out. The MLS, albeit a rocky start, seems to have it figured it out. The only other sport that we've seen in America that doesn't operate with the bubble does not have it figured out, not even close. We are about to introduce the biggest of those sports here into the sports economy here in 1 month. What are we learning from Major League Baseball that we can avoid this happening in our own sport?
I think the NFL is learning, like all of us, that we need a bubble, or at least the chances of this spreading and just the S completely hitting the fan without a bubble are much higher.
It's way too late for the NFL to even do it.
That's what I was going to say. Is it even possible at this point? I mean, I understand that in Texas, there's like 22 Division I universities. You could do it down there. You can't tell me there's not some high school fields in Oklahoma where there's 15 of them lined up next to each other. Is it possible as far as like the infrastructure? I believe it is. Is it possible with the timing and the money and everything else that they've already had in place to completely shift at this point? What are we, 40-something days away from that Chiefs-Texans game? I don't think that the NFL has a choice at this point but to try to stay outside the bubble.
That's why I said from the very beginning where we were having these conversations and people kept bringing up the mortality rate. Now, we're not talking about these athletes dying. Right now, if you test positive for the virus, that potentially means putting your game on ice. That's not how we treat the flu. That's not how we treat a stomach bug. Tomorrow, if Patrick Mahomes had the flu or if he had the flu in the Super Bowl, they would allow him to play. If he tested positive for the coronavirus, he would not be able to play in the Super Bowl. So it was always about how the virus affects the sports. And we're now seeing in Major League Baseball, we are 7 days into the Royals schedule. One team is unable to compete for a week, and one-fifth of the games that were on the schedule have been canceled because of the virus. You cannot draw up a worse start for Major League Baseball. Coming up in about 20 minutes, there's some big-time NFL news regarding George Kittle and Antonio Brown. We'll get to that coming up. But next, we'll head to St. Louis and be joined by Brandon Kiley of ESPN 101. What in the hell's going on in St. Louis? We'll find out coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. We'll be joined by our guest coming up momentarily, but there's some breaking news in college football. A source tells The Athletic that the Pac-12 is going to follow the same model as the SEC, and they will go to a 10-game conference-only schedule, which starts September 26th. So the SEC is doing it. The Pac-12 is doing it. Next week, we will see the plan for the Big 12. I will expect them to do the exact same thing and announce a 10-game schedule, I guess be a 9-game schedule, starting September 26th. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, we're supposed to do what our daddy tells us to do, and the SEC is the daddy of college football. So I'm not surprised that they made the decision that they did a couple of days ago, and now the Pac-12 follows. And we should, I would think by the end of the weekend or so, the Big 12 is going to make their final call.
Let's head to our phone lines right now to talk to someone with a modicum of talent. He has moved to St. Louis at ESPN 101. His name is Brandon Kiley. BK, how you doing?
I'm good, fellas. How are you guys doing? It's been too long.
It has definitely been a long time. BK, what's going on in St. Louis? So this entire thing, everybody knew that you were going to have one or two positive tests. Now one or two positive tests cancel games?
Yeah, they have to, man. I don't know if you guys saw what happened on Sunday with the Marlins, but they had three positive tests. They eventually found out about the fourth. They ended up playing that game, and it is now Friday, 5 days later, and they have 18 positive tests amongst the players. Man, this is the thing about this virus, is we're learning something new about it seemingly every day, and we've heard so much about the incubation period. I'm not trying to go all doctor on you guys, certainly not that, but we've heard so much about that in our daily lives, but we don't really see it as sports, guys, until it impacts sports. And this is the incubation period right before our very eyes being broadcast on live national television. The Marlins, from Sunday until today, have seen this spread throughout their roster, and that's the problem for the Cardinals right now. You've got two guys that had it. They were on a plane from Minnesota to Milwaukee on Wednesday with those two guys being on the plane because they took the test earlier in the day, didn't get the results until this morning. So now you have no idea how many guys in that clubhouse actually have it. So, yeah, there's two positive tests, but there might be 12 dudes on the team that have it. We just don't know until this thing goes through their system.
No, BK, you're 100% right when it comes to this, and I know that you maybe don't have the answer to this. I don't think you turned into Dr. Anthony Fauci all of a sudden, but how can this plan work then? Like, how can sports outside the bubble work if now two positive tests, we're all fearful that that could potentially turn into double digit the way that it did in Miami? How can this work?
It's a great question. It's something that I've been asking all along. I didn't like baseball's plan from day one. I still don't like it today. I think if you're looking for ways to make it more likely that it can work easier, it needs to go to daily testing immediately. It can no longer be this every other day. We'll eventually find out 48 hours. You need to be able to test every day. And the big thing for me, you cannot have these dudes getting on a flight without them knowing what the test results are. If it means the Cardinals on Wednesday get their test and then they can't fly out to Milwaukee when they had the day off until today and they just fly out there this morning whenever they finally get those results, then that's what has to happen. I think this is what we're going to see in the NFL is we're going to see teams give tests on Saturdays and then they quarantine their players overnight wherever that is at a hotel and then they fly in on Sunday morning once they get those results. That way they know once you get on that flight, everybody that is there should be negative and should be good to go. That's the way this is going to have to go moving forward. You almost create your own bubble whenever you're about to get onto that flight.
BK, I think that a lot of people in Kansas City are kind of holding their breath for baseball season and hoping that the Royals can pull off some sort of a miracle. But if there's not a football season, the Chiefs can't defend their Super Bowl, this place is going to go absolutely nuts. Now, I don't know if you know this, Brandon, but St. Louis, the city you're in now, doesn't actually have an NFL team. So I was just curious, how different is it? Because it's a baseball, just crazy city, knowing that this is what they have to get in right now. Is it the same type of thing where if the Chiefs don't play, Cardinals fans are going to go absolutely nuts?
Yes, it is. Baseball here is what football is in Kansas City. And if the Cardinals are not able to finish out this season, it's going to be rough for these fans. Now, that being said, this isn't your typical Cardinals season. Most of the people here aren't particularly thrilled with the way that they've assembled this roster, so that does change things a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, this would be like whenever Alex Smith was the Chiefs quarterback, if the Chiefs weren't able to finish out the season this year, Chiefs fans would still be furious about it. It just wouldn't quite be what it is with them trying to defend a Super Bowl title.
Did I see, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the plan is that they're going to play these games a doubleheader on Sunday and they're going to have seven-inning games? That's the plan?
So the plan is the game today that was supposed to be played right now has been postponed to Sunday. And as you said, that's going to be the first of this new rule where they are now playing seven-inning doubleheader. So that will be played on Sunday, as of right now, in that doubleheader with seven innings apiece. And then tomorrow's game, as of right now, is still on. Now, I'm going to be stunned, absolutely stunned, if that game is actually played because I don't know how you're going to do that after what we just saw with the Marlins on Sunday. I don't think you're going to be able to play that game. I don't know if they're going to be able to play any of these games this weekend. I think a lot of that is going to be determined by the test results that we find out either later today or tomorrow. But I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the plan as of right now, according to Major League Baseball.
Right now, we're talking to Brandon Kiley of ESPN 100 in St. Louis. Two-part question here. What's your confidence level that Major League Baseball can safely and successfully get through their regular season and playoff? What's your confidence that we'll see college football? I know you're a big Missouri fan like myself.
Yeah, I think college football is going to be really tough. I'll start with that one first, and then I'll get to baseball. College football, you've got kids that are on campuses, and you're going to try to have them not go to the bars, not go to their friend's place, not go to the other dorms. Like, it seems wholly unrealistic that that's going to be able to work. And I hope that it is, but I just don't see it. With baseball, it's somewhat similar. I mean, we've now seen that these guys are just contracting the virus, and when they do, it ends up spreading like a wildfire. I mentioned the Marlins, but that is the test case that we have right now. I mean, Carrington, tonight, 20% of Major League Baseball will not play. There's been 31 games already that have been postponed, and we are less than a week into the baseball season at this point. So my confidence in them being able to finish, 5%, it's really low. I don't think this is going to be able to be finished this year.
That is Brandon Kiley with ESPN 101 in St. Louis. BK, I just want to tell you that Sean misses you. The listeners miss you. I do not. Thanks for coming on today.
You're the worst. I don't miss you. I'll talk with you soon.
I do miss that guy, genuinely.
That's Brandon Kiley on today's show. Coming up next, let's talk about the biggest two stories in the NFL. George Kittle and the San Francisco 49ers are very far apart on a contract. Antonio Brown could possibly play this season. And we'll talk some Royals baseball as Brady Singer might be the best pitcher on the team. That's all coming up. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. A lot of Royals news. We'll talk to Vern coming up at the top of the hour. We'll also get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. So keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio. There is some Royals news that we'll get to, but the two big stories in the NFL, I think both impact the Chiefs. Rob, hit my music. The San Francisco 49ers and George Kittle are off to a very poor negotiations, according to Mike Silver of NFL Network. Quote, there remains a pretty significant disconnect philosophically between the Niners and Kittle's camp. The Niners believe they want to reset the tight end market and give him a great tight end deal. And Kittle is kind of saying, I think I'm more than just a tight end. It's really been a flat market at the position. Jimmy Graham sort of set the standard in 2014. So there is a big divide on what needs to be. You've always kind of brought this up where someone like Kittle and someone like Kelce, although their production's very similar to a Julio Jones or a top wide receiver in the NFL, there's sort of a ceiling on what they're going to make that's way below what the top wide receiver can make. I mean, that's been the age-old fight. If you remember Jimmy Graham and his fight when it came to the franchise tag, he wanted to be franchise tag like a wide receiver, but he ultimately lost that and got paid like a tight end. If I'm a Chiefs fan, if I'm the Kansas City Chiefs, this is something that I'm monitoring, and this is something that I'm really keeping a close eye on. If Kittle wins this and gets paid closer to a wide receiver, I just don't know why you wouldn't think that Kelce's going to be in the exact same position here sooner rather than later.
The best tight ends should get paid like the best wide receivers because that's what they are. I mean, 15, 20 years ago before Tony Gonzalez and Shannon Sharp and Jason DeWitt and Antonio Gates and all these dudes changed the game. Yeah, you were basically an extra offensive lineman that every now and again found your way out in the open and caught a pass. That's not what these guys are. These guys catch 100 passes and score 10 touchdowns. They do what Julio Jones and Mike Evans and these best wide receivers do. It doesn't make sense that the best wide receiver market, so let's say you want to franchise a wide receiver right now, you'd have to pay him $16.5 million. And then you look at the tight end market, and the best, by pretty much everybody's account right now, Travis Kelce, makes $8.5 million. It makes absolutely no sense to me. If I'm Kelce, and we'll have to see what happens here with Kittle, but if Kittle ends up getting a deal, let's say it's in that $15, $16 million range, then I think Travis Kelce has absolutely every right to walk into his boss's office and say, hold on, I want a raise.
I'm looking at it right now just from the franchise tag value. So the franchise tag takes the average of the top five players at the position. That's how they come to the number. The wide receiver franchise tag is $7.8 million. The tight end franchise tag is $10.6 million. So a tremendous gap. I ultimately think the Niners and Kittle probably find a number a little bit in the middle. And I think that Kittle probably does reset the market and sort of create that new ceiling. If I had to guess, I think he signs around $12 or $13 million. So he doesn't get high-end wide receiver money because that's way over what the current ceiling is at tight end. But he gets a little bit more than what Jimmy Graham got back in 2012.
The problem San Francisco has, you don't want to piss this guy off. You don't want to let his contract eventually run out and then let him walk. What else do they really have when it comes to known commodity / superstars on offense? Not their wide receivers, not their running backs, not their quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. The one really top end talent that they have on that side of the ball is George Kittle. So they better work it out, because if they don't, they're not nearly as, look, they're a solid football team because they can play offense, defense, and they've got a great head coach. If they don't have George Kittle, they lose a lot of what they have.
So that's the George Kittle news, as he and the San Francisco 49ers appear to be on very different pages when it comes to his contract negotiation. Antonio Brown got one of his two suspensions, so he has been suspended for 8 games of the NFL season. Now, I do want to point out that suspension starts whenever he gets signed. So if you're a team who's interested in Antonio Brown, it's better for you to sign him in week 1, where he misses weeks 1 through 8. But I do want to point out, this isn't even involving the issue with the young lady. This is just another incident. Now he's got the 8 games for. He has that hearing September 15th. Remember, he had those allegations with the woman and the text and all that kind of stuff. So he could miss more time than that. I don't know why anyone would want to be in the Antonio Brown business. And when I hear the Baltimore Ravens basically come out and Lamar Jackson say how they feel like he's the missing piece, how he'll fit in the locker room, that tells me you don't think you have enough to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. If you have to openly talk about how your locker room is quiet and how Antonio Brown could fit into the locker room, it tells me that you're desperate. It tells me that you're stressed. It tells me that you feel like you don't have enough and you can't beat the Kansas City Chiefs straight up. It's a bad move for for Lamar Jackson to be begging for AB in my mind.
Yeah, although the one guy that maybe brings a little bit of credibility, like if he calls your name, is the quarterback, and the quarterback happens to be the MVP in Lamar Jackson. I hate to say it, it would never happen. If Patrick Mahomes opened his mouth and he said, I think that Antonio Brown would fit in this locker room and help us win games, I'm not saying it would ever happen, but the Chiefs would certainly listen. I think that's what's going on with the Ravens right now. To be dead honest with you, I keep seeing across the bottom line, breaking news, Antonio Brown suspended for 8 games. I have no idea what dude's suspended for. There are just so many things that have happened since in about a year, like a calendar year's time, that I can think of off the top of my head. I know that he's suspended. I assume it's from the league, not a specific team, because he's not on a team, but I have no idea why.
So this is from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. Antonio Brown's 8-game suspension takes effect week 1, regardless of whether he's on a roster or not. So my bad on that information. Could be extended if further violations are found related to an ongoing civil suit in Florida, per source. So the ongoing civil suit is the incident with the young lady. So we'll find out what happens in that scenario. But we do know that Antonio Brown will not be eligible to play weeks 1 through 8 in the NFL season. That means he will have missed, let's say he plays the earliest he can come back, 23 of the last 24 weeks of NFL football. Antonio Brown has not played in those games. I just don't know how realistic it is for him to bounce back and go back to being that old player that so much of this is based on. AB being healthy, AB really being able to help you. Man, it's tough to take 2 years off, especially at that position, and then go back to being a dominant wide receiver in the NFL. And then what trouble is it worth? Let's say that you're signing Sammy Watkins. Let's say that his skills have eroded to that point that he's a guy that you think can give you 700 yards receiving. Is it worth that for all the extra baggage that comes with AB? It was easy to put up with it when he was the most dominant offensive wide receiver we've seen this side of Jerry Rice and Randy Moss. Is it worth it now for a guy who maybe is a 700, 800 yard, 5 touchdown guy? I don't think so.
And he's getting up there in age. He's now north of 30. So do you want a 30 plus year old wide receiver that hasn't played in a couple of years that causes a lot of trouble? If you told me, you know what, you're going to get the same guy the last time you played a full season where you had 1,300 yards and 15 touchdowns, or the guy the year before that had 1,600 yards and 9 touchdowns, we can keep going. 12 touchdowns the year before that, 10 before that. When we see Antonio Brown on the football field, even the one game in 2019 for New England, he did score a touchdown. The question is he still that guy? I don't know.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get into a brand spanking new Levine's List. Yesterday, manager Mike Matheny called a great team win for your Kansas City Royals.
Just right from the top, guys making something happen and putting the pressure on, and once again, you know, giving him a run or so to work with, and all the way through that lineup, so good things. So, guys, you know, Gordo, after beating a shift multiple times, and then first to third a couple times, Mondi shortened things up. Just a great overall effort. That and the bullpen did a fantastic job for us.
That voice you just heard was the manager of the Kansas City Royals, Mike Matheny. If I had to characterize the Royals road trip, it was they did what they had to do. it was expected that you were going to lose the series to the Cleveland Indians. You then lost that series. And we said from the very beginning, at worst, you had to split the series with the Detroit Tigers. If you won 3 out of 4, cool. We all were going to take that. But at a bare minimum, you had to at least split the series. You now went 3-4 on the road. You now come back home and you continue to tread water if you're the Kansas City Royals. It's basically one of those that you live to play another day. That's what happened. We said it yesterday, ending the show. It was a must-win game for the Royals. I know that it's still the first week of the season, but if you're going to go to 2-5 and the Tigers were going to go to 5-2 and you were going to be 3.5 games back of that baseball team, I don't know how hopeful we could be about the rest of the season. But again, they did what they had to do. They continue to progress. They continue to keep your hope and optimism as they are now 3-4 heading into their home opener.
3-4 is fine after a week in a 60-game season. That's all we asked for. Like, we didn't expect them to be 6-1 as long as they're not 2-5 or something like that. And really, if you break down the individuals with a fine-tooth comb, it's the good and the bad. I mean, look at Whit Merrifield. He's hitting .333. He's already got 7 RBI after a week. That's great. Bubba Starling, we didn't even know if he was going to have any sort of impact on this team. He's looking pretty good. Mikel Franco's been phenomenal. 2 home runs, 7 RBI, hitting .286. Soler's got a couple of long balls. And then you look at some of the other guys like, you know, Rob's dude, Ryan McBroom, who's hitting a solid .154. Salvador Perez hitting .179. And the one head-scratching, I guess, player so far to me has been Adalberto Mondesi, because he's a guy that's hitting .207. I was listening to the broadcast a couple of days ago, and the comment was made that it almost looked like he didn't have his head in the game. And that's kind of what I've seen when I've watched or heard Mondesi so far this year. Luckily, we're a week in. We're talking about 29 at-bats, hopefully a couple hundred more to come. But he's definitely the guy that I would have my eye on here the next couple of weeks.
So today is the home opener for your Kansas City Royals. Here's the new owner of the club, John Sherman.
I'm grateful that our home opener is finally here. Grateful for our players, our partners, our staff, our community, and for you, our season ticket members and fans. All of you have stuck with us on this unscripted journey. Now it's our turn to finally return the favor with the joy of Royals baseball. We can't wait for the day when we welcome fans back to this place we all love. In the meantime, come join us on TV, on radio, and on our social channels. And when the time is right, know this, Kansas City, we'll be rolling out the red carpet to welcome you back to the K. I can't wait to see you.
So that is the new owner and chairman of the Kansas City Royals, John Sherman. He is the majority owner of your Kansas City Royals. It is weird to have an opening day in the middle of the summer, the end almost of the summer, but that's kind of the way that 2020 has been. Let me ask you this question. Now that we are a week into the season, is Brady Singer the best pitcher on this team? Because we have seen two turns around the rotation, and he has been absolutely masterful with a under 4 ERA, 10 strikeouts, was great yesterday against the Tigers. Are we at the point where Brady Singer is this team's best pitcher and most dependable pitcher? Because I think we're already there.
Yeah, and in 2 weeks, we might be saying that he's the number one and the Bubich is the number two, and who knows who's going to be the number three. A lot of that is because of what you're talking about. Brady Singer, he's been really good. I don't think anybody expected Brady Singer to be as good as he's been, where he's got 10 innings pitched and he's got an ERA of 3.6 and he's got 10 strikeouts. That's all you could ask for a guy with no big league experience. And Junis came down with COVID. So did Keller. Duffy's looked pretty good. Let me be fair. Danny Duffy's actually looked pretty good after his first couple of starts, but you know, process of elimination, you look at the Royals starting pitching staff. So far through the first week, there's absolutely no question that Brady Singer is the best starting pitcher on this team.
What I like most about Brady Singer is, I agree with everything you said, but I don't know if it was his best stuff last night, but he's still grit and grind and found a way to get it done last night. And that's what makes great pitchers great. When you look at the advanced numbers, it's things like he didn't throw as many, he didn't have as many strikes looking. He gave up more fly balls, gave the two homers, struggled a little bit to find the zone early, didn't have as many strikeouts, but he still got through 5 and only gave up 2 earned runs. What makes great pitchers great is not when they have their best stuff. When Clayton Kershaw has the A-plus stuff, he goes out there and gives you 9 and tears up the Brewers or whoever. But when he's, you know, I don't really have today, I'm nibbling, I fight through the zone, and he can still give you 5, 6, only giving up 2 earned runs, that's what makes pitchers great. I think that was Singer last night. I think he kind of made the books a little bit out on him, maybe not his best stuff, but he still was good. That's a really encouraging sign.
I think that he's looked really advanced for 23 years old and a guy who is just starting his very young, very early major league career. He seemed really advanced. And if anything, he gives you hope starting pitching wise. And if we're thinking over the last 10, 15, 20 years, how many times would you say that you had legitimate hope in one of the prospects and young pitchers that the Royals have had? It hasn't been a whole lot. Like, we aren't really at this place very often with the young, very talented pitcher showing you some early promise in their career. Two games is not a career make, and we certainly need to see a whole lot more from Brady Singer, but the early returns have been very promising.
I'm trying to think of the answer to your question. The last like 10 or 15 years, how many young pitchers did I actually get really excited about in the system? Obviously Zach Greinke. We knew about him before he's even a big league ball player. Yordano Ventura, I got super excited about that guy. Danny Duffy, and I'd say that's I can't really think of anybody else. That's probably the end of the list when it comes to homegrown talent. And now they've got Brady Singer, looks like the number one. Tonight they've got Chris Bubich going, which is big because Singer's a righty. So now you go righty, lefty with the young guys. I assume that it's got to be weird type of pressure on Bubich tonight because, one, it's the home opener. So when the skipper gives you the ball and says, all right, go out there and pitch the home opener, most of the time, that's what everybody dreams of. Well, nobody dreams of doing that in front of an empty stadium. So there's pressure because it's opening day. There's pressure because they come home. There's less pressure, I suppose, because there's no fans. But then again, there's more pressure because of what Brady Singer did last night. So I think that tonight's one of those games. It's not as important as last night's game because they lose last night and they're 2-5 and looking up at Detroit, a bad baseball team, then that's a terrible first week. But I think, Carrington, for the next several weeks, we're going to be saying the same thing, that tonight's game is big because you want to hang around 500 as long as you can for a team like the Royals, and then make your move at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say right now, Brady Singer and some of the other young players on the team have given you reason to be encouraged.
Sure.
Where over the last couple of years, you have had reasons to be discouraged by what you've seen. You got reasons to have some hope and optimism about what this team can do in the years to come. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. Vern will be on the show coming up in 15 minutes. We'll also get to a brand spanking new Levine's List, but Monday Night Football has announced their next crew, and I'm sad to say that this person will not be a part of it.
Listen, all these Diva wide receivers wanted to go to the bathroom. As a defensive lineman, we didn't go to the bathroom. You sat on the bench, did your business, and you got up. Well, these are the type of plays that historically have gone against the Vikings. The Minneapolis Miracle. Plays that are fluke plays that went against this team. I'm sure Vikings fans are saying it's about time we get one of these plays to go our way. When you look at Kelvin Benjamin, guys, he's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end. It's cool outside, and as a player, you're thinking, you know what, I don't need to drink much water. And as a player, you actually need to drink more when it's like this because your body still sweats the same. It's so true. Also in the game is an extra offensive lineman. So I think they're bringing an extra lineman in the block.
Took that hit just moments ago from Tracy Walker. He went to the medical tent. And now they will take a look at him back in the locker room.
I'm glad he's okay, but that was still a terrible call against Tracy Walker.
So that was Booger McFarland of ESPN. I'm sad to tell you that Booger McFarland will not be on the next edition of Monday Night Football.
You're kidding me. He was so good. He was so smooth. He's so much fun to listen to.
They have announced it. The three are Steve Levy, Brian Greasy, and Lewis Riddick. That is the new Monday Night Football crew. This is probably the best that ESPN could do with their own in-house staff and not breaking up the team that they have for college football. There were some rumors about Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler doing it, but you weren't going to have them do your big-time Saturday night college football game and then turn around and do Monday night football. That never really made a lot of sense. NFL fans seem to like Lewis Riddick. They like his analysis. They like his voice. He has a certain level of credibility. Steve Levy has been around for forever, and you have the former quarterback in Brian Greasy, who's called a lot of games and done some good work when it comes to college football. This is not a great crew by any means, but this is a solid, dependable crew, and that's not what they've had on Monday Night Football these last few years.
It's a good crew. I like all these guys. I can watch these games and not have to mute my television like I did with the great Jason Witten and Booger McFarland a couple of years ago. Part of me feels bad for Joe Tessitore because he was drugged down so far by the ineptitude of Booger McFarland. Tess isn't bad.
They didn't do my man any favors.
Tess isn't bad. When he used to do college football back in the day, when he does boxing, like, Tess is actually pretty damn good.
He's one of my favorite ones.
Booger's just so bad that they had to break that thing up.
They gave him Jason Witten and Booger McFarland.
What are you gonna do with that, bro?
The weird thing is, I actually thought that Booger McFarland was going to work on Monday Night Football. He does really good stuff for SEC Network. Like, whenever he does their kind of chime in and studio analyst work, I thought he was pretty solid. I thought he was going to be a welcome addition to Monday Night Football. We learned very, very quickly that was not going to be the case. I mean, broadcasting was so bad. Jason Witten went on as like, you know what? Hey, I was much better at playing football than talking about football. Get me out of here.
That's how bad he was. Why don't we just go back to the classics like Al Michaels and Dan Dierdorf and Frank Gifford? Now that I talk it out, Frank Gifford's dead. I don't think that would work.
I actually think when it comes to this, it's never going to go back to how it was, but I think what really makes the Monday Night Football is Sunday Night Football has had their crew in place, it feels like, for 10 years now. Fox has had their crew with Aikman and Buck. Everyone else seems to have it all figured out. The only people that seem to have these big problems are Monday Night Football, and Jason Witten should have got his start. Not everybody is Romo. Like, not everybody can not call games, start calling games for the first time and be an instant hit. Jason Witten should have cut his teeth on the early morning Big Ten games.
Oh, hold on. He should have called Blue Valley Northwest games for at least a year. He was terrible.
He should have called those games early with no pressure. Because part of it is we all hold the Monday Night Football broadcast up to such a standard where you're going to make your mistakes early on. And you could tell that the criticism from the job got to him really early on. And he was just thinking about it. Like, I refuse to believe that ESPN missed that bad. Where if we had heard Jason Witten call those same games that Pam Ward calls with Wisconsin, Minnesota on Sunday at 11, and then he got to grow into it a little bit more. I think he would have had chance for success. We always talk about with rookies, throwing them into the fire. Jason Witten's first broadcasting job was Monday Night Football. For some people, that can work. For Romo, it can work. It did not work for Jason Witten at all. They threw him into the deep in the pool, and he couldn't swim.
I wonder if he even turned in a resume, or they just called him, and they were like, hey, you know Tony Romo, right? Yeah, that's my boy. I was in his wedding. Well, then, would you like to do what he does on ESPN? We'll give you a couple $1 million. And Jason Witten went, yeah, I'll give it a shot. It didn't take very long for us, the viewing public, to recognize that, yes, that guy should have been calling Pop Warner games, not NFL Monday Night Football.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will be joined by Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. There's a bunch of Royals news. We'll talk to him coming up at 3 o'clock. But first, let's get to a brand spanking new Levine's List.
So, Rob and I had to conglomerate over number 10 because I'm going to say it, and I feel dumb, but I'm going to say it. Today's Levine's List, the best offensive Chiefs players in the last 25 years. Here's who Rob and I came up with number 10. Eddie Kinnison. You can grill that, but I think you'll agree with the rest of the list. He had a couple of nice years.
Yeah, he was fine.
Number 9, Trent Green. I actually thought Trent Green was better than when I look back at his stats. He had like 130 touchdown season. Maybe it's because he was on my fantasy football team like 12 years in a row.
Yeah, and I think we typically think if your offense is going to be as good as the Chiefs' offense was, it's because of your quarterback. It wasn't.
Good point. Number 8, Dwayne Bowe. That's a tricky one, too, because he had that season. What do you have, 15 touchdowns in a season? That doesn't sound right. Is that right? Did Dwayne Bowe have a 15-touchdown season?
He did.
That's just crazy. And then everything else was good, not great. But I'm going to say he's the 8th best offensive player the Chiefs have had in the last 25 years. Number 7, this guy's going off the deep end. Larry Johnson. I was looking at one of his tweets earlier, and I was like, I can't finish reading this. Number 6, Travis Kelce. And, of course, still active, so he can work his way up.
I'm shocked Kelce so low.
Well, here's the top 5. Number 5, Priest Holmes. The tricky part about that is how much of that was Priest, how much of that was running behind the best offensive line in the history of offensive lines. I'll keep saying if Jamal ran behind that line, he would have averaged 7.2 yards per carry in his career. Number 4, Tyreek Hill. I don't think there's much of an argument that Tyreek Hill is already the Chiefs' best wide receiver in the history of the franchise. Unless you want to argue some old-timers are Stephon Page or Eddie Kinnison. Number 3, the aforementioned Jamal Charles. I mean, if you got the highest yards per carry of any player in the history of the NFL, you got to make this list. Number 2, Tony Gonzalez. We were talking about the tight end position. I'm not saying that he's the one that really changed the tight end position, but he's the one that really changed the tight end position. And then number 1, this is going to surprise everybody, the best offensive player of the last 25 years, is a gentleman named Patrick Mahomes. That's today's Levine's List.
Coming up.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.